Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
And so we went digging into the ground and started to burn many things we found. But
don't you know
we're
gonna have a solar-topia,
solar-topia. We started to burn too many things we found. That's the Divine Dar Williams singing with Pete Seeger, the legendary Pete Seeger, and David Burns, the Solartopia song. We've been missing you guys for a while. We've had cyclones and phone outages and all the other stuff. But we are at the PRN. Thank you, crew in New York, for doing such a great job getting the station back together again. This is Harvey Sluggo Wasserman talking to you in Solartopia. We've got a truly powerful and important show to talk about today. We got election theft. I do want to say Trump, I mean, there's just no end to this guy. I think our Constitution needs a stronger means for getting rid of a lunatic president. I mean, that's one of the, when they wrote the Constitution back in 1787, they didn't quite envision a complete madman becoming president of the United States. And he just gets worse and worse. Things get more and more dangerous. I do want to put in my two cents words here that Mueller, what Mueller is going to find if he hasn't already, is that Donald Trump was a miserable businessman, went bankrupt God knows how many times, and the only guy that would give him money was Putin. Putin just bought him many years before he became president, and that's why he won't release his tax returns. All of Donald Trump's wealth is in rubles, ladies and gentlemen, and we will find that out sooner or later, as if we didn't already know, and we'll see what happens. We do need a some way to get rid of the president legally and nonviolently when they're this crazy. And, you know, we had Nixon, who was completely nuts and would have blown up the world if he felt like it. And Trump has even less comprehension, I think, of anything having to do with disappointment. So let's just see where it goes. Today we've got Bob Fitrakis, the great Bob Fitrakis, my co-conspirator for many years. Bob, you on with us?
Yes, I'm here, Harvey.
And John Brakey, the great John Brakey, who has just done so much amazing work in the past few months.
Certainly.
John, with us?
Certainly am. And also, I think Chris is going to join us.
Oh, Chris Souter? Chris Souter, you with us?
Yes.
Oh, wonderful.
I'm on.
So we are all over the map today. I am in Washington, D.C. Chris, I believe you're in, are you in Virginia?
I'm in Washington also.
Oh, you are? God, I didn't see you walking around today. Bob Fitrakis is in Columbus, Ohio, and John, you're out in Tucson, is that right?
Yeah, I'm in Tucson right now.
All right, so now we are going to do
the next 10 days.
We're going to do a show that no one else in the country is going to do. We're going to talk in depth about what's going on with our electoral process. It is nonstop. The pace is accelerating in terms of issues with our completely corrupted and screwed up electoral process. One thing we have found, and which I think Donald Trump has taught beyond any shadow of a doubt, is you cannot simultaneously be an empire and a democracy. Bob and I have written a piece, Trump is the vulture come home to roost. Donald Trump is the embodiment of all these horrible dictators we put into power over the years. Pinochet, Somoza, Suharto, Marcos, Mobutu, you name it. And I think as Americans, we need to have some empathy for the people of the countries that were destroyed by these horrible dictators, the Shah, implanted by the United States covert and overt operations for the profit of the private corporations. And Donald Trump is those guys all rolled into one, as far as I can tell. We don't know that he's engaged in outright torture yet, but if you look at our prison system, it's certainly right there. Now, Bob, you in Ohio, there's a ton going on. Let's start, first of all, with the most breaking news, which is the dropout of Josh Mandel, who was leading Sherrod Brown. Sherrod Brown is one of the few Democrats, one of the few Democratic politicians anywhere, and certainly one of the very few in the U.S. Senate who's worth fighting for. Bob and I both know him. He's a good guy. He has very strong, small-D Democratic inclinations. I don't know if he supported Bernie. Was Sherrod Brown a Bernie guy, Bob?
I didn't see him at those rallies, but, you know, he's nearly as progressive as Bernie. And you like him, I think, because he was there in the Progressive Caucus when we went and gave him a report on elections.
Yes, and he's actually been reasonably sane and there, present on election protection issues. So his Republican opponent is a complete nudnik. That's a Yiddish term for, well, you can do the alliteration, has dropped out of the race. We offer him actually condolences. I guess his wife is very ill. And he was leading in the polls, which is a mystery to me. I think he's treasurer of the state of Ohio. And he has dropped out of that race, which makes Sherrod Brown much more likely to be the winner in this election. They would have to steal a lot of votes for Sherrod Brown to get defeated this time. But, Bob, there's an Ohio case, and we'll take it from you to John and then to Chris, in front of the U.S. Supreme Court right now. It's an incredibly important, I think they had oral arguments yesterday. It's an incredibly important case. Can you talk to us about this case? You personally are at the heart of this case, and can you tell us what's going on?
Oh, the case involving Ohio election laws and the question of deregistering or purging voters, which the Supreme Court will hear. And there's a variety of small and large issues at this. One, of course, is, you know, states' rights. Procedurally, do the states have a right to administer the registration poll in any way they see fit? One of the questions is, you know, if somebody hasn't voted in two federal elections, the law says federal election cycles, can they be purged following a procedure where they're notified from the Secretary of State? You had over 1 million people in 2016, about 1,032,000 people that weren't sent absentee ballots or ballots from the state. Because they didn't answer mail from the Secretary of State, two pieces of mail. Most of these people many of them are at the same address or registered to vote in the same county and were eligible to vote at the Board of Elections. But the interpretation of, you know, what it means to be deregistered, and this notion that if I didn't vote in 2014 in the general election, and then I missed the 2016 primary, should I be deregistered in the fall for the campaign? When they used to talk about these election cycles, it was thought to be 8 years. It was thought to be essentially, if you missed a presidential election, a congressional midterm, a presidential election, a congressional midterm over a, 8 year period, maybe you could be purged for inactivity. So one of the things is at stake is whether or not voting, and you can only vote if you're registered, is a constitutional right. When, you know, for example, if I took 2 years off and didn't protest, which I haven't since I've been in college, and over the last 40 years, I've protested regularly. But say I took 2 years off and didn't protest, would I lose my right to protest, to demonstrate? Would I have to register, pass some sort of fitness? So this whole notion of purging people, deregistering them for inactivity, is part of Ohio law now. And, of course, we've written about this, Harvey. We know exactly the Institute here, Columbus Institute for Contemporary Journalism, actually had every single purge voter from in the 2008 election and the 2012 election. We were the only entity that had asked for them in time. And, of course, overwhelmingly, you're purging people of color. In the 2004 election, they purged 25%, to be precise, 24.96% of every single voter in the city of Cleveland.
God, it's mind-boggling. So this is what's in front of the court now. What is the basic legal assertion? What is going to be decided in terms of actual scripture and verse here in terms of the law?
Well, of course, that always depends on how wide, how narrow, or how wide the courts want to look at this. But there's a question on whether or not inactivity can get your vote canceled. But also, there's equal protection questions that are being raised because you have four counties in Ohio, Miami being one of them, that don't purge any of their voters. They're overwhelmingly Republican rural counties. And many, the purges that occur overwhelmingly in the nine urban centers of the state, particularly Cleveland, Columbus, Cincinnati, Toledo, Youngstown, and Dayton, as well as Akron. So the notion is that you're far more likely to be purged, and even those purges, you can follow who's being deregistered, and it's overwhelmingly poor people and black precincts. So the question is, you know, does this violate basic constitutional right? Does it violate, among other things, equal protection? All of it looks like it's targeted towards poor and minority voters and Hispanic voters that tend to vote disproportionately Democratic.
Chris Souter, you're also an attorney. Have you been following this case, and what do you think?
I have been, and, you know, I think there are about seven or eight states that use the same procedure as Ohio does. I was down in Florida, in Miami, in October and through the election in 2016, and we came across literally thousands of voters who experienced the same sort of thing, that they showed up at the polls to vote in 2016, and they were told they weren't on the rolls anymore. Because they didn't answer a postcard. So, you know, you're talking about this happening in at least two of the top swing states in the country, in Ohio and in Florida. And, you know, it's obvious what's going on. This is clearly a part of a larger strategy of reducing the voting population of people that are more likely to vote Democratic than Republican.
Is it safe to say this is a Jim Crow strategy?
Well, it's modern, you know, it's 21st century Jim Crow. It's much more sophisticated. The Jim Crow that that was fought in the 50s and 60s during the Civil Rights Movement was more brutal. This is a kind of a silent Jim Crow, but it has much of the same impact.
John Brakey, have you encountered this strategy in Arizona?
Oh, so since day one, and you know, backing everything that Bob Petraeus, you know, talked about, and you know, I'd be reiterating the same thing because it's part of the tool chest of election chicanery. And these people wrote the book about it. They know where to steal and where they can steal with impunity. And this fight really is about is curtailing their toolbox?
Well, so the strategy is that the Secretary of State of a state like Ohio or Arizona or Florida, and there are others, of course, when they ascertain, when they suspect that the voter, the citizen might be black or tend to vote Democratic, although, of course, if the Democrats were in power, they'd be doing the same thing. We got to be fair here. So they send a postcard or a letter to the address on file of the registered voter. And if it comes back undeliverable, they strip the person off the voter rolls. So the
now, it's actually worse than that if you don't respond.
Right.
See, that the old way was if it came back undeliverable. The new way is if you just don't respond. And a lot of people don't open up mail from agencies. Either, you know, they think they're soliciting something, or you know, since it's not during an election year, they think it's not really relevant at the time, and it gets put in a, you know, at the bottom of the pile, and eventually gets thrown out. So it's originally what it was they would send it, and if it would come back as undeliverable, that would be cause. But now it's much broader than that.
And I would assume that the Secretary of State, in sending these letters, does not include a self-addressed stamped envelope for return. So if you're going to respond, you got to get an envelope, get a stamp, and
write
some
exactly.
kind of letter. That's outrageous. It's utterly outrageous.
In Ohio, they'll send you two if you don't reply to it. But Chris is absolutely correct. And here in Ohio, Harvey, actually, we had a really good history up to Ken Blackwell. But in the 1990s, both the Republican Bob Taft and Sherrod Brown, who was Secretary of State, as well a Democrat and Republican, they used to compete to see how many voters they should register. Also in Ohio, a lot of these polls, this goes back to computers and list and big data. The purges in the 2004 election that haunted Cleveland, remember, Diebold was in charge of maintaining the rolls through computer list, and 10,000 people were glitched in the presidential year, even though Ohio's practice is to do it in not in presidential years, not in even number years, but in odd number years. And they claimed it was a computer glitch. Over 10,000 people just, you know, a month or so before the election were purged. Also in Ohio, Triad, a company that's very close to the Right to Life movement through the Rapp family, maintains in numerous, I mean, the vast majority of counties, they help maintain the registration lists. So there's always a question of who's targeting this. And in Hocking County in 2004, you know, we found 10,000 voters, overwhelmingly Democratic, purged in the election year. So, you know, this is the stripping, systematic stripping of the rolls. And in the old days, you know, of Ken Blackwell, I mean, these people were targeted, and there was no doubt that that's what was happening to them. I mean, they were targeting students all over the state. A federal judge had to intervene and said, you can't target somebody you don't know. So that was the Republican Party that was doing that. So now it's fallen upon the Secretary of State to do these mass purges. Here's the key question, Harvey. In a state where these rolls are computerized and someone's name on it, why would you purge them? And so why wouldn't you, in a state that requires and allows 17 different forms, at least, of voter ID, why wouldn't you just have them produce the address? I mean, why would the solution to this be to deregister as opposed to, say, you know, make sure this person's voting at the right address? Why wouldn't the Secretary of State try to make sure somebody who hasn't responded is voting at the right address if they've moved and assist them rather than stripping them from the voting rolls.
Well, just think of all the money they save the taxpayer by removing those electrons from the silicon chips in those computers. I mean, that's a big expense.
Well,
so here's
some of the. There have been some states now, I think beginning with Oregon and California and maybe Rhode Island and a couple of other states, just a handful of states that now have automatic registration. If you have any interaction with the state, whether it's through a driver's license or you pay taxes or you get a public benefit, you're automatically registered. And if you don't want to be registered, you have to affirmatively notify the state that you don't want to be registered. And, you know, it works fine in those states by doing exactly what Bob was talking about, which is that, you know, that the state can update it when you come, you know, update your address when you come to vote. It's very simple to do that. But, you know, when you take a look at the coverage of the oral arguments, it's pretty clear that the court is kind of living in, at least many of the members of the court, living in another time period, and it's not really that difficult to manage voter lists, as they seem to suggest.
Amazing. So now this case will turn legally, I suppose, on the question of the extent of that the federal government can tell the states what to do about maintaining their voter registration lists. Bob, as the attorney here, is that correct?
Well, I think that'll be one of the key questions, you know, whether we're going to have 50 separate standards. And it's really not 50 separate standards. I think Chris and John both can attest in their own lives. A lot of it often is what goes on at the county, right? In Ohio, you know, you may have John Houston, but you also have to deal with 88 counties, all who may have their own interpretation of who should be purged and who shouldn't be purged. Many of them contracting out individually with people who are maintaining these lists.
Wow, mind-boggling. And but this oral arguments were made yesterday, I guess, and now we wait for the decision, which probably will be 5-4, and we'll have to figure out where Anthony Kennedy is going. Is that a reasonable prediction?
Yeah, it appears that Kennedy has not been very good on voting rights generally, and judging from the coverage of his comments, I wouldn't be optimistic that this is going to go for the way of the voters. I think it's more likely to go for the state of Ohio.
So if the state of Ohio wins this case, John Houston, the Secretary of State, who's a Republican operative and who's running for governor, will be able to purge pretty much whoever the hell he wants to off of the voter rolls. Is that correct?
I think you're right about that.
I think they're really systematically, and I think Greg Palast is right on this, targeting lower income, former felons, people of color, particularly black voters. And part of the problem when Houston went after, a 1,032,000 voters and wouldn't send them a absentee ballot here in Ohio, segregated them out. Those were disproportionately from poor urban areas. We found when we looked at the run-up to the 04 election that 40% of the purges in Toledo, for example, which were huge, Tom Noe's wife, Bernadette Noe, Tom Noe, who's convicted of money laundering into the Bush campaign, is they had deliberately targeted, you know, the key black precincts, the heavy black precincts. And we found that in Cincinnati as well, and Cleveland, again, being the clear example. But I agree with Chris and the European Union, in most of the states there, they're, and as part of their constitution, it's a shell clause. It's the duty of the state to register its citizens. It's not hard. When I was going through the data of the people who were excluded from getting a absentee ballot in Ohio, one of the things, if you looked at, there was about 32,000 people that had moved out of state. And even if they had moved out of state, if they still, you know, were domiciled here, they still might have been able to vote. And then there was a small group that had died. But, yeah, one wonders why you can't figure out linking up the county, you know, record recorder's office to the voting office. What's so difficult? Why do you cast the huge net and get rid of a million people when you could get rid of, say, 10,000?
Well, because obviously they would, they're guilty of voting while Democrat. VWD. All right. Well, okay, so that's critical. That's a big deal. John Brakey, you have followed, of course, the Kris Kobach election purge, Jim Crow cross-burning commission that Donald Trump set up. We have recently seen that that's been dismantled, and the whole corporate media was scratching their heads. And what they did was move this operation into the Homeland Security, what do we call it, a department, I guess. What do you think about what's happened with this Kris Kobach commission and this next step?
Well, I first want to give a shout-out to the state of Maine, which is a state I'm originally from, and just want to thank the Secretary of State of Maine, for who is the only Democrat on the commission, who challenged the Trump Election Commission and said, hey, I want equal access. I want these documents, too, and they would not provide. And when he won the case, Trump threw a temper tantrum and shut the whole damn thing down. And now the fear is how much of this crap is going to be absorbed into Homeland Security, which I have, you know, thinking that it's just one step more to fascism if that was to happen.
Well, now, according to Greg Palast's article, which I read, this is a wet dream for people who want to strip the voter rolls, moving the commission into the Homeland Security operation where we have no access, where they can claim national security. Kris Sauter, have you followed this?
Well, I have. There was an article in the Post. It's funny because I was talking about this with some folks yesterday, wondering what they were going to do with the data from the states who had cooperated with the request to provide all kinds of individual data about voters. Majority of the states did not cooperate, but there were some that did, mostly Republican states. The Post article claims, that, or the White House claimed in that article, that they are going to destroy that data. It's hard to believe that that would be the case, but they don't really need that data. Homeland Security has a lot of the data that they need to go after people. So I don't know, but I was surprised to see that piece in the Post.
Bob Fitrakis?
What was the specific question again?
Well, the movement of the Kris Kobach KKK Voter Suppression Commission into the Homeland Security. What do you think the implications are?
I think the implications are staggering because it'll depend on, you know, what the administration is about. And if you get a huge anti-immigrant administration, remember that, I mean, there's been challenges in the past that the courts have rejected. But now if it's under Homeland Security, you know, we saw this in Ohio, right? Look what they did in Ohio, in Warren County back in 2004. The election officials called a level 10 Homeland Security alert, diverted the ballots to a warehouse, kicked out the press, kicked out all the election observers, put it under the control of a local Republican operative, and Bush ends up with about 10,000 more votes than predicted in the area. I mean, level 10, the Republican-elected sheriff openly laughed at the notion there was a level 10 Homeland Security alert. You know, essentially, I believe they stole votes in Warren County in 2004, all under the guise of a security alert. And oddly, they didn't shut down the elementary school that they were voting at. They didn't shut down the Board of Election. They just grabbed the ballots and diverted them under the guise of a possible terrorist attack. Yeah, this could be very dangerous. Out of all the departments in the government you want to handle, you know, Homeland Security would not be the one I would choose.
Unbelievable. So now we have a federal agency of mass suppression, Homeland Security, in charge of purging the voter rolls. Is that accurate, Chris Souther?
I think you put it exactly what's likely to happen. I mean, it really is unbelievable. Plus, if you've been following the whole debate about DACA, the Trump administration wants to throw billions more at into what they call border security, but it's all run out of the Homeland Security Department. That's going to be that's just more and more money for a militarized United States and less money for the needs of people. But I think you're right. That's what's likely to happen, rather than to have sort of this commission that was hapless and seemed unable to get anything done, and now they're going to funnel it all into an agency where there's very little transparency. We're not going to really know what's going on.
So this is a real KGB Gestapo operation here. Just really, you know, trashing people off the voter rolls, and nobody. I mean, I hate to long for the days of the KKK commission, but it was certainly preferable to having this done by a bunch of spooks outside of the public scrutiny. John Brakey, what do you think?
Well, I think that we're in serious trouble. And you know, I can point to stories that every election here, they used to have the bomb squad clear the building. You know.
It's amazing.
Before 2004 and 6, they did that. And before that, I think that we have to start looking about what we're going to do and how we can go ahead and find the right teams to put out there. And that's why we're forming Audit, which USA is to go ahead and challenge in different states. And just to another segment is that, you know, we filed, Chris did, or our team, January 1, to the Alabama Supreme Court, and we're still waiting for the reply from the Secretary of State. That's way past due. I think what's going on in Virginia and the outrage of how this Shelby Simons election went, and after me and Chris worked hard there, and we were assured for the most part that the ballot images were not being destroyed. They were. It was just like Alabama. And to
well,
me,
talk about
that's
that
the shocking one.
Let's segue from stripping from the strip to the flip. We're talking. You want to talk about ballot images and electronic voting machines? There seems to be a cross tide here. We're at the end of the generation of voting machines that had no paper trail that were installed, and with HAVA, the Help America Vote Act, after 2002, those machines are now beyond obsolete. And so a new generation of machines is being installed, and these machines should have the capability of producing a paper ballot or at least a electronic ballot image. So, John Brakey, do you want to give us the latest update on what's been happening with that technology?
Well, I think that, pardon me, is that we have a really kind of a simple way to explain it that we're trying to get people to understand, because it's all to do about chain of custody. But there are now, because of these digital scanners that replaced the optical scanner, which was a light bounced off a piece of paper, left no evidence behind, to a digital scanner. And these digital scanners, they do not count the voted ballot. They produce a picture of that ballot on both sides and then use the picture to count and create a cast vote record singly, and then that all goes into the database, and there's a chain of custody. So basically what I'm saying is, and we've won in two red states in court, the fact that there are two official ballots now, the one the voter filled out and one the machine counted. One is to protect the other. That hand-marked paper ballot is put away after election night in an envelope and sealed away. And you need a court order to open it up because it's an original. This is a exact copy that's married to that ballot, which is a public. We're finding all over the United States that these images are being destroyed and people are being misled what their purpose is for. And the system was built to use these images, quote unquote, to audit and adjudicate elections. That's the big news.
Well, is this machine, are these machines that produce these paper ballots and these ballot images, are they immune to being hacked?
Anything can be hacked, and that's why it's very important that you have the original backup and these two things are tied together. But me and Bev Harris know this as a fact. Fraction Magic, which is a virus program that can weigh votes, can change it can change things on the fly, but it cannot change a hand-marked paper ballot that's married to a ballot image. They can make it hard for you to get at the original ballots, but if these images exist, you may have taken away the impunity of a hacker, and that's why they're being destroyed. Bill Reisner says it this way. John, what are they doing? They're protecting the right to cheat now or in some future election, and they don't want this information out there.
Yeah, the beauty about this is that the main company that manufactures these new digital scanning voting devices did so with the understanding that it would make the process more transparent and that it would assist in auditing and assist in recounts and so forth. And the election officials that not all of them in the country are destroying these digital ballots, but many of them we're finding are. And we know that the country is quickly moving to these new digital voting equipment systems. And the beauty is that, as I say, it provides the potential of making the whole voting system more transparent. And there's great resistance among election officials to that transparency. They like the convenience and the speed of digital voting, but they don't like the transparency. And so the battle is really, 2018 is really the year in which this battle is going to be fought, and it's one that John and I are in the midst of. And as he alluded to, we went to court in Alabama. We won in the trial court. The Secretary of State there got a stay before the December 12 special election for U.S. Senate. But the case has been briefed, and we'll see whether or not. I mean, it would be quite a victory to win in the Alabama Supreme Court with Roy Moore's former colleagues. But the irony of that case is that Roy Moore, I think the Secretary of State, when he went to the Alabama Supreme Court, thought he was protecting Roy Moore, and now Roy Moore has come out in favor of protecting ballot images. So you never know who your political ally may be.
Well, Bob Fitchake, has there been any a confrontation in Ohio yet about the you know, the new generation of vaccines? Bob, you there? I think Bob may have had to go for his other show. Bob Patricus, are you gone from us? Okay, so what is the future now with these voting machines? Are they going to spread across the country? Are other states going to buy them? What? Who is the manufacturer? Is it ES&S?
ES&S is the big one. Go ahead, Chris.
No, I was just going to say ES&S is the primary manufacturer, but there are several. And I think that our strategy, by us, I mean John and I and a group of other folks that are that support election transparency, are looking to go to these states where they have either moved to or are in the process of moving to digital voting, and to either convince them by persuasion or convince them by litigation, because there's a federal law that we believe covers this. The federal law requires preservation of all voting materials for 22 months after the election. And for some reason, election officials in some states are not including digital ballots in their definition of election materials.
Wow. How do they get away with that?
Well, we're hoping not to let them.
Mind-boggling.
Because this equipment is new, it's not well understood. Even among our allies, it often, or our people who should be our allies, it often takes quite a bit of persuasion and explanation for them to understand what we're talking about. And so that's one of the things we're up against. It's new, and people just don't understand either how it operates or its potential for transparency.
We're talking with Chris Souter and John Brakey, two of the great heroes of the election protection movement. And Bob Fitchakis. Bob, are you gone from us? Bob Fitchakis has been with us. We did cover the incredibly important arguments in front of the United States Supreme Court over the question of who can purge voter rolls. This is going to be a question for the core of our democracy. If the Supreme Court decides 5-4 that secretaries of state in the various states have the right to purge voter rolls without strict guidelines, basically the Secretary of State in any state can essentially decide who's going to win these elections. We've also talked about the KKK voter purge operation that was installed by Donald Trump and suddenly disappeared into Homeland Security. I mean, that's about as dark as it gets. If you have this federal agency involved with national security and all sorts of secret interventions into people's lives, deciding who gets to stay on the voter rolls, you know, that's right out of the KGB, for God's sakes. And we're talking about now the new generation of electronic voting machines. I got to ask you guys, John Brakey and Chris Souter, push come to shove, which would you prefer? Hand-counted paper ballots or this electronic voting machine that produces a ballot image? Which do you think ultimately
is a more reliable
reporting device for the will of the people?
Well, for me, I believe that federal elections should be run by the feds through the states, and it's a separate election, and it's all hand-counted. And then for the states right now, because they haven't got any kind of really established way of understanding hand counting and how it's done properly and how it's done in Europe or in France, different countries like that, that they'd be compete, because I do believe in state rights. And I think it's very important because, you know, definitely Homeland Security is on my list as somebody I want to work with, and or the American people should be forced to do. And so basically the direction that we're going, we think, is going to be a huge help. And I hope people, you know, if they want to know more, because, you know, we're looking, Harvey, that I'll probably be going to Virginia in the next 10 days. And then I'll be also probably going through several other states up there. They're already 100% ballot imaged. The state of Maine is 100% the DS 200. Rhode Island is 100%. Maryland, Washington, D.C. These are states that we want people to know and to meet with and let them know how this process works and get up there and educate a lot of friends. That's the first thing.
In answer to your question, Harvey, the country has, taxpayers have invested literally billions of dollars in voting equipment, and they do so every 10 to 20 years or so. Personally, what I'd like to see, since we have this equipment, and by 2020, probably 85% of the country will be on this digital equipment. I'd like to see them, if it were up to me, the unofficial count on election night be done by machine, and that there be an automatic recount everywhere as a part of their canvas process, whereby they hand count all of those ballots in order to get the final certified count, so that the unofficial count on election night would be machine count, but the official count would be done by hand. They can do that. That we see in recounts, and I've been involved in dozens of them, that you can do a quality hand recount in very little time. It's really a function of how many people are involved in counting. But too often, we were in Wisconsin, for example, for the 2016 recount, John and I were. And in Milwaukee County, which is the largest county there, they elected to do a machine recount because they thought they wouldn't have enough time. But when we began to talk to the Milwaukee County clerk, the chief election official, he conceded that doing a hand recount was really not that much trouble. I think they just went that way because they thought it would be easier. There's no question that a hand recount ultimately is more reliable. But one benefit you would have by doing it both ways is you would have the speed, because the country really wants an answer on election night. You would have the speed of the machine, and since the machines, most states have these machines now, or all of them have the machines, most counties do, and then you would have the accuracy of a hand recount, which could be done then over the next week to 10 days, and you would end up, with a reliable count. And the most important thing, there are two important parts to that. One is accuracy, but the other part is public confidence that the result is accurate. And I think if you were to do it both ways, the public would end up being much more confident that the result was an accurate result, and that the public will was being followed.
Well, then the question, then it all boils down to this. How reliably accurate is the paper ballot that's produced in this system as an exact indicator of how the citizen voted? In other words, are we 100% sure that the paper ballot that goes into the bin for recounting is, in fact, an exact replica of what the voter wants? John Brakey, can you answer that?
You know, it depends on what machine you use, okay, and if they put the inkjet back in it. You know, the number one vote-by-mail counting machine I imagine in this country right now is the ESNS DS850. It does approximately 300 ballots per minute. And as it's counting, it takes a picture. And this all happens in a millisecond. Takes a picture, lists the text, and puts a number on the ballot and marries it to the image and to the cast vote record because it's made for auditing, okay? And that is the system that we're fighting for. I want people to know. And I picture a day that you should be able to take those ballots, upload them to online by precinct with a cast vote record, and then you and me, Harvey, and a couple of other friends could get together with clickers, and we could count 800 ballots in a race very quickly by teaming up and using a method that was developed out of Wisconsin by Karen McKim, who's just a phenomenal lady that Chris and me both know. You know, we're about trying to take away their impunity to steal, but this does not prevent other fears that I have, believer, in the system, because it is election chicanery mixed with possible other things. And, you know, with these voter databases, they know that if I say to hell with it, I'm leaving Arizona, I'm moving to New York, I registered a vote, they got my signature on file. They can go ahead through a vendor, possibly do things. I mean, this is practically an industry in our country. It's suppressing people from voting, election fraud, and it's just a lot easier with these computers, and that's why what me and Chris and others are doing is so important. We're trying to make the black box into a transparent box. But that doesn't stop the other possible attacks of ballot stuffing. But I'd like to spend more time worrying about that than the knowing how fraction magic works.
So, okay, but let's say, so you mentioned the absentee ballots. So the absentee ballots come in, they're scanned, but there's no, the voter has no way of confirming that what's scanned in is a representation of the absentee ballot, an accurate one.
There is none, except that the machine accepted it, but it's an anonymous ballot as soon as it leaves the envelope or goes into the box.
Okay, so we have to then rely on the chain of custody of the absentee ballot that comes in. Somebody has to then be reliably scanning them. Now, the people who go to the polls.
And that's why you can't destroy the images, because the images are part of the chain. And the chain has to be from, if you mail it in, Harvey, they're going to save the envelope that the signature was on. You see what I'm saying?
All right.
That's part of the requirement. And that's why they cannot destroy these things. And it's pretty brazen that somehow ESNS and these companies could build a button in the machine to destroy public records.
All right. Well, listen, we're almost out of time. John Brakey, how do people get a hold of you, and what's your website that you want people to come to?
Well, the best thing is to write me, johnbrakey@gmail.com. You can also find me on Facebook, John Robert with an S, Brakey. And we have a new site. We're changing sites right now, and it should be up in about a week, and that's going to be called auditusa.com and .org most likely, too. We're in the process. Our old site is down right now. Well, with election nightmares, and we just haven't been using it. So that's the best way to get a hold of me. And thank you for having me on, Harvey.
Chris Souter, how do people get hold of you?
Well, I'm on Facebook also. Chris Souter, S-A-U-T-T-E-R.
Okay.
That's probably the best way. You can reach me through John. My email address is Sauter.com, S-A-U-T-T-E-R, C-O-M, short for Sauter Communications, which is my company, at AOL.com.
Okay.
You know, my students laughed at me for still using AOL, but I do too. So there we go. I guess
yeah, I know. I get a lot of razzing of it, but you know,
it's sign of our age.
You don't want to change.
And crew in New York, thank you so much. If you will post this, I will send you a blurb immediately. You guys are great, Tom Brakey, Chris Sauter.
Thanks very much.
Continue this. See you next week. Solartopia. Keep the faith, everybody.
Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
Don't you know we're gonna have a solartopia, solartopia, solartopia.
Garden was lost, and so we had to work to pay the cost. And so we went digging into the ground and started to burn many things we found. But
don't you know we're gonna have a solartopia, solartopia, solartopia.